Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. You know, we chat with some very, very interesting people on these broadcasts, and today we're going to have one of the more interesting ones, I think, that we've had in a long time. We're welcoming back Jason Uribe today. He's the head of Code 3 Consultations, which is based out in the Napa Valley in California. He has an amazing story. And his company is quite amazing. As you know, a vehicle accident can really be a devastating experience. You could suffer from injuries and emotional distress as well as heavy financial losses. And being heavily involved in the motorsports industry, our guest is here to help people recover from the aftermath of a collision by providing expert witness services that are thorough and very persuasive. With his vast experience, he has the in-depth knowledge and firsthand experience needed to accurately assess any and all modern safety systems and how they operate in motor vehicles. He is obviously heavily used as an expert witness in court cases, but he knows how to tap into the mechanical and the electrical knowledge to decipher the validity and the integrity of a potentially compromised system in a car that could have been associated with the accident. And in addition, you'll get advanced understanding of vehicular dynamics, which is used to create 3D presentation images of the findings. He does that. From a driver's standpoint, he uses his experience as a performance driving instructor to properly break down and analyze all the actions taken by an individual that could have resulted in the accident. He's heavily knowledgeable in this area. He is also a volunteer firefighter out in the Napa Valley area. So he's quite a remarkable chap to talk to, and I want to welcome him back again. His name is Jason Uribe. He has a great website, and we'll give that to you as we go along. So let's welcome him back. Jason, nice to have you here. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
It's early out there. I know it's 8 o'clock where you are, but thank you for taking the time out to talk with us today. You know, I'm from the things you do, I'm interested in learning a little bit more about a performance driver. Define that for me. I know that's what you do and you've done a lot of, but what does that actually mean? Spell it out for me so I understand.
Yeah. So as far as the motorsports industry goes, as well as the fire department, whether it's performance driving or just someone that has an elevated level of driving experience, it's really all about the training that you receive. So whether you're doing it on a racetrack or you're taking your DOT test for your CDL or anything like that, it's having that elevated level of training, which is really what defines a quote-unquote performance driver, and that's really where I try and hone in on whether I'm working with students or whether I'm working on a case is what's the highest level of training did this person receive? You know, what type of coaching did they have prior, if any, and how could that have affected the outcome of the incident?
So a performance driver, that's different from a race car driver, right? I mean, they're two different things. Or are they?
I would say there are differences, but a lot of it's really similar. I mean, the methods that we teach to a student that's just learning how to drive, you know, just getting their permit, versus the methods that we teach to a professional race car driver that's won many races, I mean, they're more or less the same. Granted, the level of application might be different. You might be using the brakes much harder on a race car than you would on just a casual everyday going car, but the method of how you apply those brakes is the same. And that's something that rings true whether it's in a truck, car, motorcycle, bicycle, anything like that, anything that kind of relies on the vehicular dynamics, having the rules of gravity apply. I mean, the way that you do something doesn't really change. It's just the amount that you do that will change.
Okay, I get it. Well, that's kind of fascinating, to say the least. And I mentioned you're a firefighter. You've been, I know, interested in firefighting for a long time. And you finally underwent the six-month training program in the Napa County Fire Department a couple of years ago, and you've been a member of the volunteer staff department in Deer Park out there ever since. You know, there's this very, very successful television series on now about Cal firefighters who you know, fight fires in the wilderness out in the California mountains areas. Are you kind of the same thing? Are you one of those guys?
Yeah, so my department, we work hand-in-hand with Cal Fire. We actually contract with them. So a lot of times, if there's a Cal Fire incident, whether it's a, you know, wildland fire or anything like that, a lot of times we are, as volunteers, dispatched as well. So I've gotten to know those guys really well, and it's been a great experience.
You know, it's really been a very successful series. Is it pretty accurate? I gather it really is.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think there's things that have to be censored out just for, like, public viewership. However, I think it's as accurate as you can possibly get the real thing.
Well, the series has one of the best television producers in the business, Jerry Bruckheimer, so obviously I'm sure it's as ambitious and as accurate as it could be. So let us talk a little bit about, well, we can talk about that, and we will as we go along, but let's get back into what your company does and actually what you do. Code 3 Consultations. Describe for me basically what your firm does. How do you function? And you know, what do your customers want when they come to you? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so Code 3 Consultations, the way I market myself, the way I market the company is I'm the one-stop shop for when it comes to vehicular investigations or expert witness testimony. And what I mean by that is I can, whether it's a client, whether it's an individual person, or whether it's a law firm, an attorney, anything like that, once I get brought into the case as an expert witness or just investigating the car crash, I try and do 100%. Like I'll offer all my services as the actual investigator, going to the scene, taking photos, getting everything I need for my own investigation, and then actually doing the work, determining exactly what happened with the vehicle, going into the vehicular dynamics and putting together presentations of how I think this happened, how things could have been different, so to say, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then actually putting together a proposal for a testimony that I can stand by and that I can promote to my clients and just different things like that. And, again, I try and make it 100%, all services included, as far as once you contact me, I'm going to take care of everything on my end so that I can take that off of – I don't need an attorney or I don't need the actual client to be sitting there stressing about all this additional information that they might not know a whole lot about. You know, that's my job. That's where I take over, and that's probably the biggest selling point for me.
Well, first thing that comes to my mind is that obviously it helps to be able to visit the scene of the accident after an accident has happened. And yet I would imagine a lot of the times that when people call on you, the accident may have happened, you know, several days before they call you. And that makes it a little bit more difficult. How do you handle in situations like that? I mean, it's rare when you can get to the accident scene right after an accident has happened. Wouldn't I be right there?
Correct, 100%. Yeah, and it's a pretty crazy statistic as far as, especially with motorcycles, the average motorcycle-related incident, once it actually goes to trial, is 3 to 5 years after the actual incident date. So trying to go back and recreate the same conditions, whether it was with road work or anything like that, can be very, very difficult. But that's where the experience and the knowledge comes in, as far as if I get lucky enough and I can go to the scene of an accident within a few days, within a few months even, and somewhat have the same road conditions, it makes my life so much easier. It helps me have more of a constant variable to work with instead of having so much guesswork. For example, I had a case a while ago that was more or less based around road construction, and they had different tarmac, there was K-walls, there was traffic control. So there are lots of variables, and then when I went to the scene, obviously this is years down the road, the tarmac was totally different, there was no traffic control, all the K-walls were gone.
So I guess the real question is I'm sorry, you drifted off there a minute. I was going to ask you, how do you go about recreating the conditions that existed at the time an accident happened? I know you do. That's one of your specialties, is in accident reconstruction. How do you go about doing that?
Correct, yeah. So that's where I really rely on the documentation that was taken at the scene. And if that's not something that I could have done myself, that's where I really rely and hope, honestly, that whoever did on the initial date did a good job. But that's what I have to base most of my predictions based off of, is those photographs, the videos, anything that I can get a hold of. And that's where I have to rely on not only my knowledge, but that's where I tap into different contacts that I have, whether it's in road work or in motorcycle design, anything that I can to try and put together the picture, because I couldn't personally be there to figure that out.
I guess the other thing that's important, especially in an accident situation, is the condition of the driver at the time. I mean, not only the road conditions and the weather and everything else, but, the condition that the driver was in. And do you always know whether the driver was he impaired in any way, or maybe not at all? Yeah, hopefully not at all. How do you investigate that part of the accident? I guess it's a police report, right?
Correct, 100%. That's one of those things where having a personal relationship with the client can make a big difference, as far as knowing that information right off the bat. If somebody was impaired, even if they were just tired or if they were emotionally charged, anything like that can affect your reaction time, especially on a motorcycle-related incident. That can be, life or death. And any kind of incident, that can be life or death. So definitely having that knowledge up front makes a big difference. And there are times when I'm looking into a case and you kind of see some things add up. You see pieces of the puzzle kind of come together in a way that maybe they shouldn't, or maybe it just seems a little bit off. And that's when I would ask the question, as far as, okay, was this person impaired? Did they have any type of anything going on in their life that could have affected their mental state, anything like that? And having that information can be very, very useful.
Well, I know you specialize. There are a number of degrees in areas where you specialize, and we'll go through them. But one of them, I mean, obviously expert witness, we'll get to that in a minute. But you do accident investigation to try and help collect information that someone needs, attorneys, I guess, to build their case and present it clearly to the court. So talk to me about what you go through with regard to collecting information on an accident investigation. That can be very time-consuming and tough.
Yes, for sure. And I would say the most important step, and probably the first step, is just documentation. It's getting as many photos, getting as many videos, anything that I can to help me build this case, not only for myself but for my client, is the first step, and also probably the most important step. The more information I can have, the better. I'd much rather have an overload than not enough. And then from there, it's just going together and taking all that information that I've gathered, putting together in somewhat of a story, so to say, something that I can envision and therefore I can actually present. I can kind of break down into more simple terms and then give to my clients, whether it's the individual or an attorney or whatever it might be. And then that's kind of how we build our case. And one thing I do want to point out is that idea, that proposal, is ever evolving. So what I mean by that is, if I get X amount of information, that's what I'm going to build my case off of. And then if I have a witness come to play, or if I have a random, anonymous tip kind of come in, anything like that can drastically affect the outcome of the actual proposal. And it's one of those things I try and always keep an open mind of, is, I might have something figured out, but at the same time, I might get a phone call and it might totally flip everything upside down. So being able to obviously be confident with what I present, but also having an open mind to additional information or anything that could possibly change the outcome is definitely something I try and remember and focus on.
Now, obviously, when you're being called upon to do an accident reconstruction, for example, my assumption is it would be the law firm that's calling you. Would that be right, rather than the individual who was involved in the accident? And it could be a considerable amount of time since the accident happened, right?
Correct, yeah. Most of the time it is a law firm or an attorney. I have had individual clients call me up more for consultation purposes, not so much for an accident investigation, but it does happen. And yes, I would agree, it's very time consuming. Most of the time when I get onto a case, when I get brought into a case, I know it's at least a month long commitment. Usually it's a lot more than that, but at least a month. And it's one of those things where it's a big decision to take me into play. At the same time, I can make a big difference, and that's something not only I try and remember, but something that I stand by, and I'm proud of my work. I stand by what I do, and I think it makes a big difference.
And generally, in cases like that, who are you representing? the defendant who was involved in the you tell me who you primarily would be defending, not defending, but representing.
I would say it's probably 50-50 between defendant and plaintiff. I think most of the time I'm working with a defendant. That's just kind of been how the cookie crumbles as far as who contacts me for the case. There are times where I'll be working for example, the defendant, and then I realize after the case, oh, okay, this person is in the wrong. And that can always be a bit of a tricky situation, but it's one of those things where I sympathize for both sides, and I try and keep an open mind for different things. You know, anybody can reach out to me, and I can work for anybody. But it's definitely I would say it's a 50-50 between plaintiff and defendant.
And I was just thinking that there are times where you may be called in to represent a defendant, a person who was injured in an accident or who's claiming he wasn't responsible for the accident. And after you do all your investigation, you find he may have been the person at fault, he or she, after all. And that would be a surprise to the lawyers, I would think, wouldn't it? They wouldn't like
Correct,
that.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, and that's one of those things where having that documentation right off the bat makes my life so much easier. Being able to kind of present that to a client and be like, hey, this is, in reality, what I think happened, how do you want to proceed? And it's written into my contract, and it's one of those things, again, that we talk about right off the bat, where this is a possibility, and whether or not you decide to continue with my services once we find that out, is I try and leave that up to the client. I don't want to hook anybody into a contract that they can't get out of. That's just not how I operate. It's not my business sense. And it has happened before, and I'm sure it'll happen again, but at the end of the day, there have been times when I've gotten into a situation where I realized, okay, you know, this person might be in the wrong, and they decided to keep me on for the case, and we ended up actually reducing the sentence that this person received. So at the end of the day, I think I can do my job well, and I can help people regardless of how the case goes, how the case swings. But at the end of the day, it does happen where I find that the client I might be working for is in the wrong, and sometimes you just kind of got to work with the case.
You know, I would assume some of the accidents you investigate really are involving injuries that one of the individuals in the accident may have incurred. And these could be big money cases, lots of, depending on how badly somebody was injured. So there's a lot that goes into, and it's very important the kind of decisions you come up with, because, as I say, there could be a lot of money in the balance here, right?
Correct. Yeah, I've been a part of cases that have millions of dollars on the line, and definitely those types of scenarios can be quite stressful for everybody, not only me, but for the attorney and everybody involved. It's a big number, and it's something that can have a lot of weight in somebody's life, not only financially, but just how they kind of continue with their life can be night and day difference. So I always keep that in mind, and I always try and approach every case as if it's my last. You know, I don't want to be known for just doing 50% or, oh, he didn't do his best work here. I'm always trying my best to do the best that I possibly can, and I think that's only fair for my clients, and it's something that I feel I can stand by regardless of the amount of money that's on the line, if there is anything at all. Not only for them, but just for me. I mean, my own psyche, I don't do anything at 50%, and I stand by my work. And I'm proud of what I do, so I'm always going to try my best regardless of what's on the line.
You know, you're in the Napa Valley area in California, and so many people who are hearing us have probably at one time or another driven through the Napa Valley and, you know, done the winery tours. As you know, they're not super highways through the Napa Valley. You can only go so fast. And I've often wondered, because people have the chance to go into those wineries and they can have a shot or two of wine, sometimes maybe more, and then they go to another winery. Do you get involved in a lot of accidents that have been result of people, you know, drinking in the Valley area? I know you specialize in that area. Would that seem to me that would be kind of right? Am I right?
Yes, so it's a little bit hard for me being in the Napa Valley as well as being a firefighter in the Napa Valley. There's a bit of a conflict of interest when I get cases like that, not just because of what I do, but more of it's a possibility that I know the person, whether it's, you know, through personal friendship or anything like that. So that can be a bit of a touchy line. I've only been involved in one case that happened here in the Napa Valley, and it did involve a DUI, and it's one of those things that, like you said, it does happen a lot. It happens all the time where you get people that come to these wineries and then they go drive from the top end of Napa Valley to the bottom end of Napa Valley and not realize how far that is. And maybe it's a hot day, you know, all these different types of scenarios. And it does happen. You know, we get car crashes here all the time. And a lot of times it does involve alcohol or some kind of impairment. And yeah, like you said, it is a bummer. And it's one thing that I'm trying to fix myself, whether it's as a firefighter or just, you know, personally promoting safety. And I think it's gotten better in recent years, but it's definitely still a big ticket item.
Just describe for me a typical example of one of the more complex accident situations that you were called in to investigate and then actually testify. By the way, I talk to a lot of expert witness qualified individuals who point out that so many times the cases get settled before they go into court and they don't have to testify before the judge. How about you? Have you had to testify in court many times or not?
I would say, yes, I have testified quite a few times in court. I agree with you as far as there are lots of times where you'll reach a settlement outside of a trial date, and that's my preferred method. Not only does it make my life less stressful, but I think it's easier for me to present more of a complex case when we can reach a settlement and I can present something to a client that I don't have any stress of trying to break it down to a jury. I can make things more complex. I can kind of dive deeper into what I mean by my presentation. Usually when I have to go to a trial date, I don't want to say dumb things down, but I have to take some of that severity, some of that I just have to break it down more. And it just makes my life a little bit easier when we're able to reach settlement. But however, you know, sticking to the question, yeah, I have testified quite a few times, and I'm sure I will watch more.
How's that been for you, when you're being grilled by an attorney in front of a jury? That's the kind of thing I would assume that most of guys like who do what you do have never been really trained for. An attorney can really get pretty nasty towards you in the courtroom, try and twist your thoughts and your words, can he, or not?
Yes, for sure. I remember very well the first time I actually testified in court, I got grilled by the opposing party's attorney.
Yeah.
And it was definitely one of those moments that, you see it on TV and you read about it, you hear about it, and, I got this, I'm strong, I can stick through this. But, in the heat of the moment, it's hard. And it's one of those things where I think having a personality trait of just being resilient and not letting people bully you around can be very, very helpful and beneficial in this type of work. And it's something that I try my best to maintain. And at the end of the day, I stand by my work. And that's really what carries me through whatever type of interrogation, so to say, I might encounter is I'm 100% confident in what I'm presenting. And therefore, I don't have any leeway that people can really, I don't want to say attack me with, but can use against me. And that's where I feel doing a good job in the background and in the work leading up to it can really make my life easier and help me not have that gap that someone can use to their advantage.
Yeah, good for you. Talk to me a little bit about your background and what in your background has qualified you to be so proficient in so many areas that you're called upon to investigate now. I mean, you got to know how cars work, how they function, all of the different parts of the car, the electronics, and not only that, but the fact of you're a performance driver. So the driving, the person doing the driving, you're really investigating their actions as well. But give me a little idea of your background and how all that comes into play. Tell us more about what you've done.
Yeah, so I've been in the motorsports industry for 20-plus years. I've raced overseas. I've gotten to the highest level of American and international road racing that I possibly can. And it's one of those things that I try not to take advantage of. But at the same time, it's experience that I have that very few people do. I'm one of 10 Americans in the world at this time that actually have that knowledge. And looking back, it's one of those things that really shaped me as a human being, and that's really what gave me that in-depth knowledge of the industry and how many people are really involved in every step of what goes on into a vehicle's development. And then outside of that, working with as a working with different companies with different racetracks as a performance driving coach and instructor, that has really showed me more about the mindset of a driver. And kind of like what we talked about earlier is taking somebody from just having their permit to a full-blown professional race driver and seeing the steps and seeing the similarities and kind of having that different level of understanding between the mentality of, okay, this driver with this amount of training is going to take this action, and this driver with this amount of training will do something else. And kind of being able to use that and keep that in the back of my mind as far as this is a constant variable. It's not something that's always going to be the same. It's not something that's always going to be different. It's just something I need to keep in mind. And then outside of that, with the fire department and with my electrical stuff, it's been one of those things that has shown me so much about more of the vehicle itself. You know, what happens when a vehicle impacts at this speed, and what will this affect in a vehicle after it's been crashed? So a lot of times it might be a stupid thing, but a lot of times after a car has a front impact, the horn will go off and the horn will just stay, you know, blaring forever. And that's, I don't want to say an electrical fault, but that's one of those things I have to keep in mind is if that electrical harness has been compromised so bad in that area, where could it have been compromised somewhere else? And kind of how that trickle effect kind of dives down throughout the entire list of things I need to go through. That's where I really rely on all of my experience and all of my contacts in the industries to really help me put that together.
You know, that's a great explanation, really. A good answer. I understand totally, and thank you. Another question that I have is I know that you're based up in the Napa Valley in California. What area do you investigate accidents in? I mean, you obviously you're qualified to do it anywhere in the country, but how far do you roam? Which is a question, you know, where do you people, are you only in California and only in Northern California, or will you represent people in cases in Texas or Nebraska or something like that? How about it?
Yeah, so I'm based in Northern California. However, I try my best to have a nationwide coverage, so to say. I don't want somebody to feel that they can't call me just because of my location. I have no problem hopping on a plane. I've been traveling all my life, and it seems that most of my cases recently have actually been on the East Coast over in New York, and I've had one case in Texas, and I have a case that's ongoing in San Diego. So I'm kind of spread out. But, however, like I said, I don't want to limit myself just to one area. Whether or not I know the area is a little bit of a different story. I mean, sometimes it does take a little bit more background work to figure out what the general feeling of the road would be, and that might not make a lot of sense to some people, but you know, once you drive a road forever, you start to get kind of used to it, you start to pick up the nuances. That makes my life a lot easier of knowing the mindset of how someone would drive a road, so that makes it easier when I know the place that I'm going to. But however, I'll always make it work, and yeah, I try and have a nationwide service.
Oh, that's a great answer, too. I want to point out you have a really great website. Let me give this website. It's code3consultations.com. Code3consultations.com. So wherever one of our listeners may be, if they want to get in touch with you, you know, for your help or your investigative talents, or even if it's a lawyer, that's how you go to find out more about Jason, his company, and how to get in direct contact with him. Again, I'm going to repeat the website. It's code3consultations.com. And by the way, Jason's going to be with us for the next couple of weeks on Mondays at this hour, 11 a.m. on the East Coast time. It's 8 o'clock on the West Coast. But it would be Jason, we're excited to have you here, and there's so much you can tell us about. So we'll get some more interesting, you know, comments from some of the really interesting cases you've been involved in to tell us more about them. And also, we'll get more involved in your firefighting background, too, because that's just as interesting. So we'll look forward to having you back next week, okay?
Yeah, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Listen, it's just great to have you. It's one of the things we specialize in is talking to guys with experiences like you who actually are just so great. So thank you very much for being with us. I'm so glad you've taken the time out to join us today. And that'll do it. Again, our guest has been Jason Uribe from Code3Consultations.com. He's in the Napa Valley area of California. Go to that website to get in touch with him. Thank you, Jason.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit CloseUpTelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Till then, take care and bye for now.